for me, a big part of Polymi was being at this intersection of kind of developer tools on the one side and cloud on the other side. And I think a lot of the folks, especially the early folks who came to Polymi, were really excited about working at that intersection and about kind of pushing forward where the industry was in terms of that intersection. And that, you know, let us, there's a lot of really great folks out there who are excited about that intersection, excited about both of developer tools and cloud. And so we were able to talk to them about our vision, get them excited about that. And once folks were excited about that, many or most of the cases, they wanted to come and be part of it. My name is Luke Hoban. I'm the CTO at Polymi.
This is Code Story, the podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries who share in the critical moments of what it takes to change an industry and build and lead a team that has your back. I'm your host, Noah Labhart, and today how Luke Hoban combined his passions for cloud and code and created developer-first infrastructure. All this and more on Code Story. Luke Hoban has been into tech and computers for many, many years. It started off when he was a kid, but sailed with him into college as he got into languages. He spent the first part of his career at Microsoft building tools, IDEs, and programming languages. His take on the frame of mind required to build a language is centered around what you want it to do, combined with how it feels for the programmer to express what they want it to do. Bottom line, it is an art, not a science, and is much more about product and user interaction design than anything. Post-Microsoft, Luke went to work for Amazon on the cloud, specifically EC2. The thing he had in the back of his head for many years was how to bring the programming model into the cloud space. He eventually left Amazon and set out to combine his love of designing programming languages with the movement and excitement of the cloud. This is the creation story of Polymi.
Polymi is a modern infrastructure as code tool. And so the product is about, you know, bringing a modern take on kind of infrastructure as code to the market. The company, I think, you know, is really focused around that product right now, but really sees a broader kind of view around helping sort of engineers take advantage of everything that they have in the cloud. And modern infrastructure as code is one key piece of that. But, you know, over time, I think we're going to explore some other areas as well. In terms of that modern infrastructure as code, I think, you know, infrastructure as code is really about the ability to take the cloud infrastructure that you're working with and bring sort of software engineering capabilities into that. So bring, treat it like code, version control it and manage it like an asset that's code. And for Polymi, what we're really doing is taking kind of that modern take on it. And that means we're really embracing kind of the modern architectures that folks are using in the cloud, the scale and complexity of what folks are trying to do with the cloud today, that really has ramped up tremendously over the last 10 years as the cloud has developed. And then bringing a modern sort of software engineering approach to that lets folks use the rich programming languages and IDEs and developer tools and debuggers and all those sorts of things that they're used to, and being able to use that to leverage that to take advantage of what's in the cloud. So I think, you know, I kind of mentioned that, you know, that path of kind of going from Microsoft working on developer tools for application developers and then Amazon working on the cloud. And so I think a thing that I'd been had in the back of my head for many years had been sort of, hey, it feels like there's an opportunity to go leverage some of the things that we've done kind of application developers and bring that into the cloud space and bring some new kind of approaches to software engineering and programming models into the cloud space. After I spent some time at AWS, I talked with a colleague I worked with a little bit at Microsoft, Joe Duffy, who's our CEO here at Polymi, and he was having some similar thoughts and thinking about starting a company to go work on this. And so we decided to start the company and go after this. And I think the interesting thing when we started, we started thinking a little bit more along the lines of focusing on really enabling developers, folks building applications and services and things, to more easily take advantage of what was available in the cloud. We know that that's a thing that, you know, there's these amazing building blocks with the cloud providers. But actually putting those building blocks together is still pretty hard. And a lot of developers feel like they don't have full control over all of the resources that they've got available there. And we started off there. We did a lot of interesting things there, but actually saw as we moved on that the place that we were actually seeing the most demand, the most pull from kind of the existing market was actually more around infrastructure as code. And it was around, hey, like I already am managing some infrastructure. I already understand the cloud. But what I need to do is really scale up the complexity of what I can build, because these building blocks are amazing and my business is growing and I want to adopt these modern technologies. And so instead of me managing, you know, tens of resources in the cloud, I'm managing thousands or tens of thousands of resources in the cloud. How do I bring more software engineering practices in to help me with that? And so that's sort of where we've ended up kind of focusing, and have, you know, a whole bunch of customers and users of our open source project who have come in and have started to use Pulumi as part of how they work with a cloud provider.
Tell me about the MVP. Tell me about that first product you built, how long it took you to build, and what sort of tools you used to bring it to life.
We kind of started with some core SDKs, and we actually, you know, we iterated in a few different directions in the early part. Both, as I mentioned, we kind of started with a bit more of a focus on that developer user instead of sort of the infrastructure team. But the MVP, we built a handful of pieces ourselves. So we actually built, you know, our own approaches to, we didn't build our own programming languages, but we built our own sort of runtimes that would allow us to run programs in existing languages. We built some libraries for interacting with AWS and those sorts of things, and built out sort of an end-to-end experience for how could we make it really easy to work with and manage resources in the cloud. And over time, we sort of realized that some of those pieces, there are actually better ways to build them on top of some other foundations that were available in the ecosystem, to build on top of the existing Node.js runtime, for example, to empower JavaScript developers to work with cloud infrastructure, to build on top of existing resource providers for the major cloud platforms that were available in the open source ecosystem. And so our MVP, we sort of did all of it ourselves, but kind of went, did a fairly shallow approach across the industry, in the sense that we only supported AWS initially, we only supported one language initially. But then as we wanted to scale those out, we kind of went back and rebuilt those things on a foundation that would allow us to sort of support any cloud, that would allow us to support any language, that would allow us to support any sort of cloud architecture.
So you segued right into where I want to go with my next question. So with any MVP, you got to make certain decisions and trade-offs about what you're going to build in the short term, or what sort of technical debt you're going to accept. And in the process of choosing one programming language, or just going with AWS, you probably had to work through that process. So tell me about some of those decisions and trade-offs you had to make, and how you coped with those decisions.
Yeah, so I mean, I think one of them, as I mentioned, was actually starting off by kind of doing it in an approach that was a bit thinner, that didn't go kind of in along each of these dimensions, didn't go to N, it just went to one in a sense. And that was one way we were kind of able to scope what we did early on. But then I think as we started to work with real customers and get sort of some adoption and things, we certainly had to go and now expand those. And so partly it was building foundations that scaled well. And one of the key things I think that we've tried to do is along each of these dimensions where we need to be able to scale well, like the number of clouds we can support, the number of languages we can support, the number of integrations with CI/CD vendors that we can support. We want to have a structural way of kind of approaching that, where there's a fixed cost, but then the variable cost as we sort of add more is relatively low. And then we can be customer centric, and we can go say, oh, well, when there's need for this next cloud provider, we can go work with a customer, we can respond to that quickly, and we can bring that online. And so I think the key thing has been building up those approaches so that we can kind of scale incrementally in each of these directions.
So then from there and scaling incrementally, like progressing your product, how did you go about that? How did you go about progressing it and maturing it? And I'm interested in how you built your roadmap and decided, okay, this is the next most important thing to build.
So I think, there's an interesting transition that I think a lot of companies, certainly we did, go through when they sort of go, it's not even just companies, it's something I've been through building products at other big companies, but that transition from before you launch to after you launch is a very, significant transition in terms of how you think about kind of your roadmap and how you think about your product development, I feel like. Before we launched, we were working with a few customers in sort of private previews and things, but largely, we were trying to kind of invent something, that didn't exist, and kind of imagine what that would look like. And we weren't as grounded in some of the, you know, hey, we've got existing customers, what do they need kind of thing. It was more about kind of jumping out ahead of where customers were a little bit. And so I think that that period before, our product roadmap was about, hey, what is our conviction about where the industry is going, what this product needs to look like, you know, what we can build, and then start validating that with users and with customers prior to releasing. But I'd say in the, you know, within a year of launching, you know, then we have enough, you know, customer base who's betting on Pulumi, who's using it now to build their businesses and giving us a lot of great feedback. And now our product roadmap process can sort of be primarily driven by just listening to what they're saying, listening to what they are telling us they need, both what they're saying explicitly they need, like we need you to fix this button or you need you to add this feature, or kind of what they're saying the problems are that they have that are adjacent to what we're already solving, that we recognize, oh, we should go solve those problems as well, because they're not the only ones who are going to have that problem. We're hearing that from two or three customers, and we know that that's something that, you know, we can go and do a great job of as sort of an addition to our existing product. And so I feel like that aspect of shifting from being convicted about kind of a vision to still having that conviction, but kind of attaching it to the what we're hearing from our customers really helps us to ground what we're doing in a big way now that we're, you know, we've had the product in the market for a few years.
Let's switch to team. So how did you go about building your team, and what did you look for in those people to indicate that they were the winning horses to join you?
First thing, and I think this is true for any company, but it was especially interesting for us. You know, I kind of have mentioned that for me, a big part of Pulumi was being that this intersection of kind of developer tools on the one side and cloud on the other side. And I think a lot of the folks, especially the early folks who came to Pulumi, were really excited about working at that intersection and about kind of pushing forward where the industry was in terms of that intersection of things, developer tools and cloud. And that, you know, let us, there's a lot of really great folks out there who are excited about that intersection, excited about both of developer tools and cloud. And so we were able to talk to them about our vision, get them excited about that. And once folks were excited about that, you know, in many or most of the cases, they wanted to come and be part of it. And so, so I think a big part of it was just finding folks who really believed in and were excited about working at the forefront of those two trends. And then from there, you know, we wanted to, you know, started off, obviously, a lot of the early company was folks who had been at some of the big tech companies that we had worked at, been at Amazon and Microsoft and Google, and a lot of folks who were in the Seattle area. So a big thing for us, you know, after the first five or six hires, where it was very concentrated there, was to sort of, you know, increase the diversity of the team, both, you know, the backgrounds folks had, where they were from, you know, spread now across the world and hired a lot more broadly. And so kind of going from that, a little bit of a monoculture around some of folks from some of the big tech companies to having sort of a more representative, you know, company that has a lot of more startup experience, has a lot of earlier stage career experience, all the things that we needed to kind of flesh out the team.
This will be interesting given the nature of your product. So I want to talk about scalability. So did you build this, and I'm going to ask this as generically as possible because I want to get your take on it. Did you build this to scale efficiently from day one, or are you fighting this as you grow?
Yeah, so I think we definitely designed to scale. We sort of, you know, a couple of aspects to that. One, that we sort of knew this was about taming and managing complexity and scale for customers. And so a big part of it was we knew that this was about managing a lot of things on behalf of a customer and helping them to tame and scale well. But even beside that, I think we knew that we needed to be able to grow. You know, we knew from day one we want to support effectively every cloud provider. And so that means we've got to sort of design for that scale, not go and do it all immediately, but design to be able to scale up to support a wide variety of different things. And so I think that was key to how we thought about things. And I think, you know, a key sort of technical approach was how do we build and architect things so that we can actually scale in these dimensions that are important to us.
Right, that makes sense. So you architected it in such a way and abstracted it in such a way to where as you needed to build in that scale, it was easy to do. Is that, am I hearing you right?
I think that's exactly right. And of course, you know, the reality, I think everyone who goes through kind of growth of their product realizes that some of the ways that they thought about scaling are true and are important, but there's also other ways that they sort of hadn't anticipated those scaling dimensions. And so we've certainly seen, you know, things we've had to go tackle and readjust our approach on as we have grown our user base and as we have grown the set of supported platforms. And so, yeah, it's definitely something you're always, as you're scaling up, you're always finding new things that are sort of starting to creak under the pressure of that scale and that you need to go back and look at again. But so far, I think, you know, generally, the most important dimensions for us have been the ones that we kind of had a sense we were going to have to architect for early on.
Well, as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
The thing I'm actually most proud of is really kind of the open source project and community and things that we have around Pulumi. You know, one of the interesting things for us, we're kind of an open source company in the sense that our project and the vast majority of the value that we kind of make available is part of an open source project we have. But unlike a lot of, you know, open source companies, there was an existing open source project that was out there in the world and had already gained some amount of critical mass and adoption, and then a company came along later to sort of, create paid offerings on top of that. And for us, it wasn't that way. We, you know, had the idea to build a company and a business in this space, and kind of knew that for the kind of product we wanted, it was going to be really important for it to be built around an open source foundation, because folks were going to be taking a bet on building things on top of that foundation and really betting on it deeply for their company. And so for us, that decision to kind of build that open source project, make that all available, really put all of the value of what we build effectively into that open source project was a big, important part of how we thought about building the company. And I'm really excited by how that open source project has flourished. It's grown a ton. We've got a ton of contributors from many of our customers, but also lots of other folks out in the ecosystem and partners and things. And really excited to continue to see that ecosystem grow and just for us to sort of help steward that going forward.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
It's always tough to sort of frame things as explicitly being mistakes, because they're sort of always there was always a good reason for doing them, but then you kind of find out new information, you learn, you go and adjust. And so, you know, there's a couple of things I could talk about, but one that, you know, we actually recently changed our pricing model, and we've actually changed our pricing model twice. And so, in some sense, you could say maybe we thought our first two pricing models were mistakes. I don't know that they were per se. They're just, you know, we kind of learned as we grew and used that to sort of adjust the approach we took. But, you know, I'd say pricing is always a really important aspect of any company and any business. And, you know, we started with an approach that was sort of based on something we call stacks. And it made a lot of sense from from our perspective and from kind of how we thought about what the unit of value was, which is really important. But it was something that we found, you know, folks coming up to Pulumi for the first time, it was a concept that they didn't understand, right? It was something that we had made up. That was a concept about Pulumi itself, and that you wouldn't have a good intuition for until you'd already started using Pulumi. And so we recognized that, you know, wasn't the best tool, that a lot of folks got stuck on thinking about that upfront instead of thinking about the value that Pulumi could offer for them. And so we made a change. We moved to a, you know, per user pricing model. And, you know, per user pricing is very standard in a lot of kind of enterprise SaaS products. But we found that as we scaled that up, we found that it led to a lot of our customers. You know, one of the things that we really enable is to sort of democratize access to kind of cloud capabilities within an organization. And so the customers we were working with wanted everyone in their team to be able to use Pulumi. And some of them wouldn't use it every day. Some of them might, you know, touch some of the infrastructure only, you know, only every now and then, but they wanted everyone to be able to and to be able to see the infrastructure that other folks are developing and not have it be a skill that was constrained to just a few folks in the company. And we realized that sort of the pricing model was actually holding back the way that we wanted folks to use it and the way that they wanted to use it. And so we've recently made a change to kind of a consumption-based model, more like, you know, EC2 or something like that, where I used to work for a little bit, where it's really just, you know, it's priced based on kind of how much you're using it as an organization and how many resources you're managing within your cloud provider. And I think that journey, you know, we learned a lot through that journey, but we've been really happy with the sort of reception and how folks are thinking about that, the pricing model that we have now.
So what does the future look like for, you know, the product and for your team?
Yes, I'm really excited about the kind of the general market that we're within. You know, the cloud adoption is still growing incredibly quickly. I think the cloud is really changing how pretty much every company and business is thinking about building and delivering the software that they deliver. And then on top of that, I think there's sort of this cloud modernization trend we're seeing where really as folks move into the cloud, they are recognizing that there's a ton of really interesting new things they can do in terms of how they fully take advantage of the cloud, all the different architectures they can use, all the different structures on how they continuously deliver and that sort of thing. And so we see that modernization phase is really something where Pulumi is playing a big part in helping companies to sort of modernize how they work with the cloud. And so we're really excited about that generally and about helping, you know, customers and users to go through that journey. And I think in terms of the company, you know, we want to continue to kind of build on the modern infrastructure as code tool that we've built so far. But we really also see that as just sort of the beginning of how we can help organizations to take advantage of the best of what they have available in the cloud. And that's going to be, you know, infrastructure as code. It's going to be helping application developers to deliver onto that cloud infrastructure. It's going to be helping compliance and security policy teams to enforce the policy that they need, and probably even more that we haven't even yet thought about. So we think there's a great opportunity here and really excited to continue to help organizations build on it.
Well, let's switch to you, Luke. Who influences the way that you work? You know, CEO, CTO, architect, really any person you look up to and why?
There was a colleague who I worked with at Microsoft, actually, who I'm just a big fan of, Anders Helsberg. He created Turbo Pascal and then C# at Microsoft. And I had a chance to work with him a fair bit on C# while I was there. And I think, you know, he's just a brilliant guy, has had a, you know, created some really impactful things for the industry, but also just really, you know, we kind of talked about what it's like to design a programming language. Just has really great sense of design and sort of that sense of how to build products that customers are just going to find really enjoyable to use every day, especially that developer customer. And it's something I learned a lot from him directly, but I also sort of frequently think back to sort of the approaches he has taken to thinking about developer experience when I think about how that's going to apply in some new area that I'm working in. And so that aspect of, you know, building really amazing things for developers is something that I really have a lot of respect for what he's done and the influence he's had on me.
Well, we talked about a mistake, but a little bit different spin. If you could go back to the beginning, what would you do differently? Or where would you consider taking a different approach?
Yeah, so there's not much, you know, I think we've been pretty happy with kind of how the Pulumi project and things have gone to date. And there's nothing that I would really change in terms of that path. I think there's a couple of things that we have in practice shifted our approach. And I talked about kind of pricing earlier. But another one that we've actually recently been investing heavily in is, you know, when we started, we sort of recognized that to be able to have support for a wide variety of cloud providers, we couldn't possibly go build that all ourselves, that we had to sit on top of existing work that had been done. And so, for example, there's, you know, there's open source Terraform providers that have large open source ecosystems around them that have built up support for how do we, you know, create, read, update, and delete cloud infrastructure in a wide variety of platforms. And so we made a bet early on to sort of be able to take advantage of those and let folks use those from within Pulumi. And that was an expedient choice at the time, but we also have realized, we knew at the time and have sort of come back and really focused on it more recently, that If we also go and build our own providers for some of those major cloud environments, we can actually solve a lot more problems for users and customers and add a lot more value back. And we have to take the right approach that can scale well. But that if we can take that approach that scales well, it opens up a whole bunch of new options for how we can solve additional problems. So that's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year has been going back and sort of changing our approach to actually have what we call native providers for Pulumi for AWS and Azure and GCP and Kubernetes. And so that's been something where we've changed the approach we take, but it's not that I would have done it differently. It's more just that we've learned and now is the right time to kind of go and take a different approach to it.
So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world. Can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
Biggest thing is just, that excitement is going to be the fuel for kind of going there. For me, it was this excitement about, hey, this opportunity around cloud plus developer tools. But that person who's excited about, whatever the thing is that they've built, whatever the market they see as being that opportunity, your passion for that is going to be the thing that drives you through to building the company, to getting folks excited about that, to hiring people, like everything that's going to come along this road. And I think just really helping them to tap into and express and get excited about and to share that enthusiasm and excitement. It's the really fun part of doing this is just the ability to share that excitement and enthusiasm with other folks.
Absolutely. Well, Luke, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Pulumi.
Thank you.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Laphart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. Support the show on patreon.com/codestory for just $5 to $10 a month. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.